This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. The quagga mussel only entered the Great Lakes in the last quarter century, but it did not take long for the invasive species, which got here through ballast water from ocean-going ships, to overspread and often dominate the ecosystem here. But the work of a biologist in New York State may have added to the arsenal available to go after these invasives. Daniel Malloy discovered a bacterium that kills quagga and zebra mussels. Dr. Malloy, at the time based at the New York State Museum, led an international team that, after much trial and error, came up with a solution which is now commercialized. This is not Malloy's first scientific conquest. That centered on out-of-control black flies in the Adirondacks. He spoke by phone with WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz and talked about how his boyhood summers spent on a lake in New Jersey informed the work he does today.
I just spent most of my time in that water with my little snorkel and my little fins, and I just got a tremendous appreciation for the wonders of what's going on biologically in lakes. So when I proceeded ahead with my education, I kind of was interested in aquatic biology. And then when I went for my doctorate, the New York State Museum was looking for someone to work on this problem that no one thought there would be a solution to, frankly. Could you use biological control to control black flies that are biting people in our state of New York? We have the Adirondack Mountains. And since tourism is one of the major industries in the Adirondacks, it's a pretty important thing to try to control them. And back in the 50s and 60s, planes were just flying, spraying stuff out to kill the adult black fly. So the New York State Museum in the 70s, when I was doing my doctoral research, said, look, Dan, why don't you tackle this problem? And again, a lot of people said, you'll never find anything. But as it turned out, after 10 years working now, and this is very important because I didn't do this alone, working with an international team of scientists, we received our funding primarily from the World Health Organization, which is part of the United Nations. And the reason for that, not in North America, but in the tropics, black flies spread the disease of blindness. It's a parasite that they carry. It doesn't happen in North America. So internationally, I work with about a half dozen scientists, and we came up with a way to control black flies. But it wasn't by spraying anything out of airplanes. It was by putting a bacterium, not one, but literally millions, into streams and rivers where the black flies breed as larvae, and then they pupate under the water and they fly out to bite people. So it's one of these spectacular successes of biological control worldwide. It goes by the acronym BTI because it's Bacillus thuringiensis israelensis. So it's a tremendous success ever since it was commercialized by companies in the 80s, been used throughout North America and the rest of the world for black fly control.
So I don't want to beat the black fly to death, but when controlled, are they a normal part of ecosystems?
It's a very, very good question, and we actually have investigated this in our research because I'm an environmentalist, and we didn't want to introduce something to control black flies and then find out black flies are critically important in the ecosystem. Anytime, let me just preface it by saying, anytime you remove something from an ecosystem, there will be repercussions. Some of them could be positive, some of them could be negative. So if you remove black flies, there will be a ripple effect in an ecosystem. The question is, how important and how damaging to the ecosystem is it? So we did a study in New York. We took all the black flies out of a stream for 2 years. We constantly treated with this biocontrol agent, which is incredibly specific, and we just kept treating and treating and treating so there'd be no black flies in that water. And we were surprised to find out that we couldn't find any major ecological ramifications from that. It was kind of a shock to us. So If someone tells you that, oh, you can remove black flies and it won't have ecological consequences, that's not true. But in our study, at least, we didn't find any serious ones to the stream ecosystem.
Interesting. So now the quagga and the zebra mussel are a whole different story. They don't belong in our waters.
Yeah, they don't belong in our waters. You know, there's nothing in life that just has negative consequences.
Okay, so what's the positive of these guys?
Well, these guys, they love to filter the water and remove particles. So even though they're the size of your fingernail, when they filter, a zebra mussel or a quagga mussel the size of your thumbnail can filter 1 liter of water a day. When you get billions of them in a water body, what they do is they clear the water. So all of a sudden people say, hey, this is wonderful. I'm sure my kids are cutting their feet on the shells when they go into the lake. But you know, the water's getting clearer. This is kind of pretty. Scuba divers, for example, may look at that clarity and say, this is a positive thing. However,
they're eating up the phytoplankton.
Oh, yes. They're eating up the phytoplankton. And therefore, that is the foundation of the food web in a water body. There are fish, larval fish, that eat phytoplankton or eat zooplankton, which depend on the phytoplankton. So you get this cascading trophic effect in water body. They call zebra mussels and quagga mussels ecosystem engineers, that when they come in, they change the dynamics of the ecology of the water body they're in.
And they're impacting power plants and clogging up.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's why I got involved in this research. In 1990, someone from here in New York, it's called the Department of Environmental Conservation, came to me and said, Dan, you know, you worked on black flies. We worked, you know, as colleagues, in a sense, on this development of a biological control agent for black flies. Do you ever think of working on a way to control zebra and quagga mussels because they've come into our power plants in New York State, and those power plants have no defense except putting some pretty broad spectrum chemicals designed for cleaning out anything in the pipes. You ever think of working on coming up with a biocontrol agent that could be used by the power industry? See, so that's actually how I got started, and it was the power industry. They gave us like $700,000-$800,000 to get started on this. A lot of people, again, called it like some sort of a fishing trip here, and a waste of money, to find a bacterium that would control zebra and quagga mussels. I didn't, you know, commercialize it. That's a company in California. But my lab did all the work, hypothesized that there was a bacterium somewhere out there in water that had nothing to do. This is the thing that a lot of people don't understand. This bacterium, which is being commercialized under the product name Zequinox, this bacterium has nothing to do with zebra or quagga mussel. It just, by serendipity, by luck, these bacterial cells have some sort of a natural product, a biochemical inside that cell, which when they eat the bacterial cell, live or dead, doesn't matter, that chemical kills zebra and quagga mussels. So I hypothesized that in 1991.
So it started with a hypothesis, and then you went through 700 or more different strains of...
Yep, yep.
Can you describe how you worked through that process?
Yep. We said we would find a bacterium that would kill zebra mussels, and even more than that, would be very specific. And the way we approached that is we went out into the environment and collected bacteria. You know, you can imagine a little petri plate with agar in it.
Right.
We isolated bacteria. It didn't matter basically where we were isolating them from, but we kind of did a lot of work in mud in rivers. And then we also contacted colleagues who have what you call libraries of bacterial cultures. So the vast majority of the things we tested were from colleagues of mine who would send 40 or 50 different types of bacteria and imagine a little powder, and we would grow it. If that powder would represent, you know, the bacteria that they sent us, and we would grow it up and we would test it. And it was really extremely frustrating because it took 4 years, January of 1995, that we found a bacterium. And there's one guy in particular who deserves a lot of credit. His name is John Holzapfel, and he's with the utility industries. He's recently retired. Because I went to him. We had tested out about 650 strains that did not kill zebra mussels. And I said to John, maybe you want to cancel our project, take your money back. And no, he said, Dan, you go back to your lab. Again, this is November 1994. You go back to your lab and you keep looking. 2 months later, we found it. It's one of those incredible stories that people will think I'm exaggerating. No. So that's how we found it, by getting bacterial strains from colleagues, and we grow up the bacteria, feed the zebra mussels, and also we would take environmental samples. And it was one of these environmental samples that proved to have this strain of a species called Pseudomonas fluorescens that kills zebra and quagga mussels.
Where did you find it, or are you not able to tell us?
Yeah, I can't. That's kind
Darn,
of proprietary.
That'd be so exciting.
That's kind of proprietary information, but we generalize and say it's from a North American river, the mud
of
a North American river. Yeah. The river didn't have zebra mussels. This has nothing to do with zebra mussels. It's just serendipity that when they eat it, they die.
Wow. To make the Wisconsin link, one of the places that you tested out was a river in Wisconsin.
Yeah. What happened is we got a grant from the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. It was for supporting this kind of research. And, the grant was a 3-year grant. And after 1 year, I left the State Museum. I retired and came here to the University of Albany, and I handed off that grant to Dr. Denise Mayer at the New York State Museum. I didn't take the grant with me. I left it behind. And the reason I'm telling you this is that's the grant that has funded work in Wisconsin. But I basically passed the baton to Denise and USGS colleagues, and they have done that work. You see, so I don't want to take credit for that work. I got the grant along with Denise Mayer. She was the co-investigator on it. And then they, in 2012, 2013, and even this year, they're carrying that baton now and doing these field trials.
Dr. Daniel Malloy now carries out his research at the State University of New York at Albany's Department of Biological Sciences. He's also scientist emeritus at the New York State Museum. He spoke with Susan Bentz. Malloy is currently working to fight a lethal parasite plaguing the commercial bivalve industry, things like oysters, around the world. There's a link to a recent New York Times article about his work at wuwm.com/lake effect. We'll take a break now and then learn about a new exhibition based on a long-standing and huge collection of folk art at the Milwaukee Art Museum. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.